You're listening to the micro version of the Savage Lovecast, www.savagelovecast.com.
If you're stuck in a relationship quandary, or if you're looking for sexual harmony, well, there's nothing you can't ask on the Savage Lovecast.
We were seeing a lot of headlines like these by late 2016 and into early 2017. Pregnancy, birth, and abortion rates in U.S. adolescents hit historic lows. American Sexual Health Association. Teen abortion pregnancy rates reach historic lows. The Hill. U.S. abortion rates fall to lowest levels since Roe v. Wade. National Public Radio. What got the credit for plummeting teen pregnancy and abortion rates? Increased access to contraception. And, very importantly, more federal dollars going to comprehensive sex education programs and fewer federal dollars, should have been zero, but a whole lot fewer, going to abstinence-only sex education programs. It took a while to get there. It was years before the Obama administration began living up to the promise Obama made during his first inaugural address to restore science to its rightful place, at least where sex ed was concerned. But the science was settled and clear for years. We'd known since early in the George W. Bush administration that abstinence-only sex education programs, or sex miseducation programs, were not only ineffectual, but they backfired. They made it worse. They drove up the abortion rate. Kids who'd had abstinence-only sex mis-ed programs didn't wait until they were married to start having that one-man, one-woman-for-life sex that abstinence educators presented as the only option. At best, they delayed becoming sexually active for about 6 months. And while that sounds good, I guess, when these kids became sexually active, the kids who'd had abstinence-only sex ed only, they were less likely to use birth control or condoms, since they'd been told in abstinence-only sex miseducation programs that neither worked, and consequently they were likelier to get a sexually transmitted infection or get pregnant, aka the original sexually transmitted infection, than their peers who'd had comprehensive sex ed. Well, we can kiss those upbeat headlines goodbye, because last Friday the Trump administration announced that it was going to stop spending money on comprehensive sex ed programs. The programs that brought teen pregnancy and abortion rates to historic lows, the programs that brought us those headlines, and start spending that money instead on abstinence-only programs. The Hill reports, the Department of Health and Human Services, HHS, announced Friday the availability of grants through the Teen Pregnancy Prevention Program, a grant program created under former President Obama that funds organizations and programs working to reduce teen pregnancy rates. Trump's HHS announced, however, that unlike under the Obama administration, grants will be geared toward organizations that teach abstinence education to teens instead of the comprehensive sex ed approach the previous administration supported. Now, this comes as no surprise to anyone who's been paying attention to this. And hey, I do not fault you if you are not paying attention to this. There is so much to pay attention to right now. So many assaults and outrages and scandals that no one can pay attention to everything that's going on or going wrong. But last year, Valerie Huber was made chief of staff for the Office of the Assistant Secretary of Health. That's the office that oversees the teen pregnancy prevention programs, funded under the TPPP. Quote, prior to coming to HHS, Huber led Ascend, a national abstinence education advocacy group, The Hill reports. So, kind of like how the Trump administration put oil and gas industry lobbyists in key positions at the Department of Interior, the Department of Energy, and the Environmental Protection Agency, Trump, always tending to his evangelical base, put an abstinence-only sex miseducator in charge of funding the nation's teen sex education programs. Zooming out for a second, Donald fucking Trump, with the five children by three different wives, the man who had adulterous affairs with the women who had become his second and third wives, the man who raw dogs porn stars and playmates, and who used to go on Howard Stern to brag about all the women he'd fucked and all the sexually transmitted infections he'd only narrowly avoided. It was his Vietnam, said the draft-dodging philanderer. That man is telling teenagers, one man, one woman for life. That man is telling teenagers to wait until marriage, for a second or third, I guess, to have sex. One man, one woman, another woman for life. Now, screw as I say, not as I screw, Republicans are nothing new. We have seen them before. We are seeing a fresh crop of them now. A whole bunch of pro-life Republican politicians and officials have been caught urging their mistresses to get abortions. The Republican National Committee's National Deputy Finance Chairman had to resign after the Wall Street Journal reported that he'd paid a pregnant Playboy model $1.6 million to go away and abort their unborn child. And a sitting member of Congress, or then sitting since resigned, Pennsylvania Representative Tim Murphy, had to resign after he got caught urging his mistress to get an abortion. And then there's Representative Scott DeJarlis of Tennessee, who was reelected by his pro-life constituents twice after it came out that he pushed both his mistress and his wife to get abortions. I would say something here about being shocked by the hypocrisy, but I'm not. Not anymore. Not where the GOP is concerned. It seems that just as Trump and his supporters are incapable of feeling shame, I am now incapable of being shocked by the hypocrisy, particularly of Donald Trump, his voters, his enablers in the media, his staff, and the Republican Party. But a price will be paid for this bit of hypocrisy. More kids are going to get sexually transmitted infections, which will please many people on the right because they believe kids should be punished for the sin of being sexually active. And the abortion rate will go up, which, despite all of their anti-abortion, anti-choice politicking, that is what they want. Just as Republicans run against the debt and the deficit and then, once in power, do everything they can to drive the debt and deficit up so they can keep running against it, Republicans run against abortion and then, once in power, they're going to do everything they can to drive the abortion rate up. Abstinence-only sex ed programs, defunding Planned Parenthood, making contraception harder to get, removing the contraception mandate from Obamacare. They're going to drive the abortion rate up just as they've driven the debt and deficit up so they can keep running against it. Because they don't care about the debt or deficits or unborn children or your born children. They only care about power. All right, coming up on today's show, a couple of wedding questions, my favorite kind of questions. I always cry at weddings, not always at wedding questions, but always at weddings. And I chat with Sonny Megatron and Ken Melvin Berg, sexuality educators, hosts of American Sex Podcast and creators of the Sex with Sonny Megatron TV series on Showtime. We talked about what kind of boundaries a sub can set with a dom. We also talked about that sweet, sweet lemonade. All that coming up on today's show. Me Undies makes feel-good underpants your butt will be proud to wear and you will be proud to be seen in. They will be the most comfortable pair of underwear you will ever own. And to check it out yourself, go to MeUndies.com/savage. Thanks to Zola for supporting the Savage Lovecast. Zola is reinventing the wedding registry and planning process to make the happiest moment in couples' lives even happier. To sign up with Zola and receive a $50 credit towards your registry, visit zola.com/savage. This episode of the Savage Lovecast is brought to you by Wink, the wine club that helps you find the wines that you will love. Get $20 off your first order when you go to trywink.com/savage.
Hi, Dan and company. I'm a late 20s straight cis guy currently living in the Southeast. About a month ago, I met someone through our mutual passion for our outdoor sport. One that's male-dominated, and in which I've found very hard to meet women. Also, where I spend almost all of my time. We hung out a lot, but it wasn't until the last week that it became more. After we slept together, she told me that she's also seeing someone else in a nearby city. They have an open relationship, and they only see each other every few weeks. Things were rocky the last time they saw each other, but she's hesitant to end things early or lose him as a friend. Am I okay with that? I felt like I got hit by a train, so I'm pretty sure that means no. We talked, and she said she hasn't been in a monogamous relationship in 6 years. She isn't jealous and doesn't want to be held to something that she doesn't need for herself. I asked if a monogamous relationship is a possibility, and after debating, then saying no, she's back to trying to decide. I know it seems rushed, but I travel a lot and was planning to leave the area soon. I also have no ties and would happily go wherever she is. I haven't had feelings this strong or found someone so compatible in my entire adult life. She said she has strong feelings for me too, and that her heart wants to, but that her brain is telling her not to. Is it fair for me to ask her to be monogamous and take a chance with me? Is there anything else I can do?
A male-dominated sport in which it's hard to meet women. My guess is jousting. Non-monogamy and monogamy, binary. You're monogamous or you're not monogamous. However, non-monogamy is a spectrum. There are all sorts of different ways in which a particular couple or throuple or quadruple can fold non-monogamy into their relationship. Different gradations. Everything from open the tiniest crack to there's no door at all. Wide fucking open. Great Plains open. That's not really the question, though. Your question, that you roll it out at the end, is it fair to ask her to be monogamous to me? Yeah, it's absolutely fair to ask her to be monogamous. And then she gets to decide if being monogamous is the price of admission that she would like to pay to be with you. And it's just as fair for her to ask you to be non-monogamous for her to be with her. And then the price of admission ball is in your court. It might help as you have this conversation to not have a forever conversation about monogamy. Instead of, can you be monogamous to me, with the implication that you're talking about the next, you're in your late 20s, you said, 4, 5, 6 decades, which might cause her to blanch. Why not say, can we date and be monogamous to each other for a year, for 18 months, a year and a half, and then we can revisit this conversation and we can talk more as we're in this relationship and it's closed initially for my comfort. We can talk more about non-monogamy and that spectrum and why you've preferred non-monogamous relationships and why I've preferred monogamous relationships, and then revisit the issue in a year, in 18 months. And at that point, we can opt back into monogamy or we can talk about the non-monogamy spectrum and whether I'm more comfortable opening it a crack then. There are plenty of people out there who would prefer, if they had their druthers, to be in a non-monogamous, consensual, non-monogamy style relationship, but who do monogamy, who commit to monogamy because that's what the person that they fell in love with requires. Because for the person that they fell in love with, monogamy was the deal breaker. The reverse is also true. There are people out there in non-monogamous relationships because they fall in love with somebody who non-monogamy was the deal breaker. And they're doing the non-monogamous thing because they gotta, because they value that person more than they value the monogamous ideal. And they were able to tackle and deal with their jealousies or their insecurities. And the reality of being in a non-monogamous relationship wasn't as scary or terrifying or jealousy-inducing or insecurity sandpapering as they thought it might be. So give it a try. Not non-monogamy, this relationship. Just have the conversation about doing it for a while and then continuing to revisit the issue and continuing to make it an opt-in choice. You can opt back into monogamy after a year or 18 months if it's working for both of you. Or after a year or 18 months, you can try it her way for a little while and see if that works too.
Hi, Dan and the tech-savvy at-risk youth. I'm a 25-year-old woman living in New York City, and I've been listening to your show for about a year. I'm engaged to a great guy, and our wedding is in 3 months. I know you think that's too young to get married, but we've had such an amazing relationship for the past 4 years that I never had any doubts about it until now. Part of our relationship is that we're allowed to hook up with other people with full disclosure, but I've only done so on a few occasions. A few weeks ago, I started becoming close with one of my openly lesbian coworkers. We were texting and talking at work at first, and then we both admitted that we were really attracted to each other. She drove me home from work one day, and we spent 3 hours making out in the car. The next day she came inside while my fiance was out, and we had the most amazing sex of my life. Now we talk constantly, and I think that we're falling in love with each other. I know it's only been a short time and that new relationship energy can make people think and feel crazy things, but I've never felt this way about anyone, and she says neither has she. She knows I'm getting married, but we don't really talk about it. We only talk about how we feel about each other and want to be together. My fiancé sees how much we talk, and I think he's going to get uncomfortable with it soon. What scares me is that nothing he could say would make me stop seeing her, and this totally goes against our entire agreement about being open and honest with each other and him having the ability to end it if it makes him feel neglected or uncomfortable. He's done nothing wrong, and I can't stand the thought of hurting him, but I feel like it's inevitable. Either I break off the wedding now or I end up cheating on him later when he tells me I can't see her anymore. I can't stop thinking that I'm way too young to get married and that there's no way I can go through with this. Everything felt so perfect until I met her, but now I have no idea what to do. Breaking off the wedding would kill my fiance and both of our families, not to mention having everyone I know hate me and the huge financial expense. but I literally don't think I'll be able to sign a marriage certificate in 3 months if I still feel the way I do now. Dan, I am totally freaking out. But when I'm with her, that's all that I want. I love my fiance, but I'm getting stuck on all the things that are not perfect about us and having trouble remembering why I thought it was a good idea to get married now. I'm thinking of continuing this juggling act for another month before I make any major decisions, and then maybe the new relationship energy will have worn off and I can think more clearly. Maybe this will just fizzle out or become a casual sexual thing, and I'm just having those premarital jitters. Or maybe I'll have to break off my wedding and completely sabotage my entire life that I used to think was so great. Either way, I can't quit her, and I don't know what to say to either of them. Please help.
So you open with, I know you think 25 is too young to get married, Dan, but you're wrong, and this is the right thing to do, and I'm getting married, and oh my God, I don't want to get married, help me, panic, panic. I met this girl, what am I doing? She's perfect, and I love her, and this person I've known for 4 years, my fiancé, has flaws. Well, you know what? So does this woman that you're crushing out on so hard. Definitely file this under new relationship energy and under pre-wedding jitters and panic. You've only known this bitch. Sorry, this woman's. No, let's call her a bitch. I don't think she's a bitch, but you can't prove that she's not a bitch. You've only known her for 3 fucking weeks. You don't know anything about her except that you like the taste of her pussy and she's a good texter. My advice to you would be to chill the fuck out and also go to your fiance and tell him what's going on so that he can help you unpack this. You can also tell him that you're not going to stop seeing this woman at this moment, despite the rule that either of you can pull the plug on each other's others. Just tell him that you're in despair and you're panicked and crushed and don't know what to do. You've been with this guy since you were 21 years old. You are 25 years old now. You are about to, in 3 months' time, make what is supposed to be, ideally, what we all make those commitments hoping that they will be, lifetime, a lifetime commitment. And you're going to mutter vows that you hope will be that we all intend to be a lifetime commitment. And that's scary. I think that's particularly scary when you're just 25. One of two things is going on here. You have met someone who could be the love of your life, and there are many someones out there who could be the loves of our lives. There is no the one, just a lot of 0.75s or 0.64s that we can round the fuck up to one. And you've met one, and you are really crushed out on her. And she is not the only one, but perhaps the better one, the one that you would prefer to him, and the one that you should be with over him, or a one that you should be with over him. Or you're panicking in advance of making this lifetime commitment, which, even though you guys have an open relationship, open a crack, some part of your reptile brain, some part of your cultural coding is telling you that once you mutter those vows, it's him and no one else forever and ever and ever and ever for the next 5 fucking decades, even though there is some allowance in your relationship for others. People go into marriage, and marriage is a big and scary cultural institution, and people go into it, and sometimes they think that the ways in which their relationship, and this can be an unconscious thought, the ways in which their relationship was working before they made that commitment can't be carried into the relationship after they make that commitment, because those sorts of accommodations or allowances that you and your boyfriend have made with each other, they're not allowed once you've had the big fucking wedding. And you know what? I'm here from the future to tell you they're still allowed. You still get to make your own way. You still get to make your marriage what you want your marriage to be. Two people who are married to each other, monogamous, not monogamous, children, no children, religion, no religion. You get to make of marriage what you two would like your particular individual marriage to be. Might help to bear that in mind. Also bear in mind, you have only known this woman 3 fucking weeks. Of course she is perfect. In time, in say 4 years, you will be as familiar with her flaws and her shortcomings and the things about her character or personal habits or hygiene routines or sexual limitations that annoy you, just as you are hyper aware of the things about your fiancé that annoy you because you've known him longer. Don't call off this wedding for someone you've known for 3 weeks. But you need to acquaint your boyfriend with where you're at, your fiance, with where you're at right now in the panicky stage that you are in, and have an honest, no holds barred conversation about it. Maybe it's not about calling off the wedding. Maybe it's about delaying the wedding. Maybe those deposits can be carried forward and you can push the date out 6 months or a year. I'm a big fan of nice long engagements, particularly when people are 25 years old and don't know their holes from asses in the ground. Good luck. Take a deep breath. When you are texting this woman, or when you are between her legs eating her out, or she's between your legs eating her out, enjoy the NRE, enjoy the sex, enjoy the passion, enjoy the connection, and remind yourself that it's only been 3 weeks and she is not perfect and you can't see her imperfections now because it has only been 3 weeks. If indeed you continue to see her at all, which if I were your fiance, I wouldn't want you to continue to see her at this moment, at this time, while you and I hashed this out and processed it and what it means and what it signifies and what it symbolizes together. And I think it's likelier panic than you've met at the very last moment, immediately before your wedding, the person who is better for you, oneer for you, than the man that you intended to marry. Me Undies are the cutest underpants you've ever seen. They're the perfect balance of comfortable fit and cute design. Every month they have new and exciting prints, and they arrive at your door in a fun bag. If you want to be sickeningly cute in your underpants, you can get matching underwear for you and your sweetie, or for you and every single member of your entire Poly Pod. MeUndies uses Lensing Micromodal in their underwear. It's a sustainably sourced, naturally soft fiber that starts with beechwood trees and ends with the most amazing fabric you've ever experienced. The results are downright dreamy. Your butt will thank you. MeUndies adventurous prints and designs are all limited edition, and new patterns are released every few weeks on a rolling basis. We just got some MeUndies with a fancy banana pattern, and who doesn't like underpants with a fancy banana pattern? MeUndies has a great offer for my listeners. For any first-time purchasers, when you purchase any MeUndies, you get 20% off and free shipping. MeUndies is so sure you'll love their underwear. They offer a 100% satisfaction guarantee. If you do not love your first pair, you get a full refund. This one is easy, folks. Get 20% off a pair of the most comfortable undies you will ever put on. To get 20% off your first pair, free shipping, and 100% satisfaction guarantee, go to MeUndies.com/savage. That's MeUndies.com/savage.
Hi, Dan. I'm calling from the Midwest as a millennial woman who is starting to attend a lot of my friends' weddings. And at these weddings, I've noticed the tradition of having guests write down advice for the betrothed. And I have noticed in that advice at each wedding I've gone to, which have been a diverse wedding, queer weddings, weddings with people with large age differences and everything in between, that inevitably people are writing the advice, have sex every day. And this is just really annoying me. And I would hate to see this at my own wedding. As a kinkster who likes to plan out my sex, it takes a while, and when we do it, it takes all day, and so it does not happen on days when we are working. And I just think that it's completely misguided and is actually a form of inevitably shaming the couple if they don't have sex every day, when it's meant to seem cool and flippant and sex positive. So I just wanted to get your opinion on this and see if this has been a wedding thing for a long time, or if it's part of the irreverence of my generation, and maybe see if we can start combating it, because I think ultimately it's shaming people instead of inspiring them to fuck more.
I think you're overthinking this. I don't think couples who get messages at their wedding to have sex every day a few years into their relationship, a few years into their marriage, realize they're not having sex every day and feel terrible about not taking the advice of all the people at their wedding who urge them to have sex every day. That's just people projecting onto the couple their own desires. They wish they were still having sex every day, or that they could have sex every day. And in reality, that's just not practical, particularly in a long-term relationship. People tend to have a little less sex over time, and people associate that drop off with marriage or with making a serious commitment. And it ain't necessarily so. There's that beginning stage of relationship when you are fucking every day, when things are fresh and new and you're still inhaling each other. And I think when people wish that a couple would have sex every day or advise a couple to have sex every day, what they're really doing is encouraging them to remember that feeling, remember that time in their relationship when they just couldn't get enough of each other. I don't think it's a literal prescriptive command to have sex every day. Maybe it's just a gentle reminder. Maybe it's just a gentle suggestion that people remember when they felt that intensely passionate about each other, so that they don't take each other for granted and that they have sex as often as they can. And realistically, no LTR, no couple that's been together 10 years, 5 years, 20 years is having sex every day. But it doesn't hurt to think about that time, to look at your partner and remember that time when you did have sex every day. And if you can remember to remember that time every once in a while, maybe when you haul out your big book of advice people gave you at your wedding, which I promise you no one ever hauls out, maybe that'll inspire you to have sex that day. Not every day, but maybe that day. Don't worry about those couples. No couples are being harmed in the offering of that kind of advice. This episode of the Savage Lovecast is brought to you by Zola. Zola is reinventing the wedding registry and the planning process to make couples' lives even happier. From engagement to wedding to decorating your first home, Zola has you covered. Zola Registry has everything you love about your favorite department store, as well as things like honeymoon funds, fitness classes, and wine subscriptions. There are over 500 brands and 50,000 gifts and experiences. It's free, fun, and easy to use both for couples and their guests. They have price matching, free shipping, personalization options, and group gifting. Zola also has a free suite of wedding planning tools, including a free wedding website where guests can seamlessly shop and get details on the registry in one convenient place. Zola's friendly customer service team will go above and beyond, whether that's helping pick out the perfect blender or walking a grandmother through a couple's registry. There's also tools for the hosts, such as a customizable checklist and guest list manager. Join 500,000 couples who have already used Zola. To sign up with Zola and receive a $50 credit toward your registry, that's spelled Zola.com, and go to Zola.com/savage to sign up and get a $50 credit toward your registry.
Hey, Dan, and the Tech Savvy at Rescue. I'm calling because I'm having an interesting experience in the sauna. I'm a 27-year-old cis woman, and after about being in the sauna for 15 to 20 minutes, I start to become, like, literally stimulated. And I don't tense my legs up in the sauna or stretch or anything. I'm usually sitting and reading a book. And the most I found online is that, you know, people having sex in the sauna and they have an orgasm, or sometimes after a really intense leg day, they'll squeeze their legs together and they're able to, like, have a really easy orgasm. But I'm just sitting and reading, and I'm suddenly super stimulated. And so I was wondering if, you know, if anyone else has had this experience, or if, I don't know, I don't really know where to go because Google didn't have an answer for me.
Trigger warning, Grandpa's about to talk about his own boners. So years ago, they don't exist anymore, so this doesn't happen to me anymore. But every time I went to New York City and I got into one of those giant New York City yellow cabs, people who are old enough to remember, they had those giant back seats. It was like a giant couch in the back of a cab. They were green leather. Every single time I was in New York City and I got into one of those giant yellow cabs and sat down and leaned back in that seat, I got a boner. I don't know why. I didn't get into the cab thinking sexy thoughts. The cab drivers, rarely in my experience, were particularly attractive. It would happen when I was with friends, when I was going somewhere. It happened when I was going to a fucking funeral in New York City. Just happened. I had this random, uncontrollable, physiological response to being in the backseat of a great big New York City cab. Didn't happen in London cabs. Doesn't happen in Ubers or Lyfts or the yellow cabs in New York City these days. Just those cabs. Those cabs that were featured prominently on the David Letterman show's original opening sequence. And they're all gone. That doesn't happen to me anymore. Why did that happen? I have no idea. And I don't think I ever will. No, it was just a random erotic association. A couple of neurons in my brain made one day when they slammed into each other. And I had this automatic physiological response to that environment. And I think that's what's happening for you in the sauna. Of course, you're naked and you're getting heated up. You're reading a book. You're distracting yourself. You're not in the moment in your body. And yet you have this association with those spaces at those times, at that temperature, and suddenly you are aroused. It just kicks in. It does something for you. Who knows why? Don't torture yourself wondering why. Just enjoy it. It is a perk of getting your ass to the gym and having a good workout and then going to the sauna and having a little relax. That's how I regarded it after a while, after worrying about it and stressing out about it and thinking I had a cab fetish. After a while, I was just like, all right, this is what happens to my dick when I get in one of these cabs. And then those cabs went away and it stopped. I'll never know. It's a mystery. Same for you. You will never know. It is a mystery. I'm going to give you a little task. I want you to pick out a wine you're going to love, but here's the catch. It has to be a wine you haven't heard of or had before. Where would you even start? Introducing Wink, spelled W-I-N-C. Wink makes it easy for you to discover great wine because Wink's wine experts select wines matched to your taste, personalized for you, shipped right to your door, and starting at just $13 a bottle. There's nothing like coming home to a box of delicious Wink wine selected just for you. It is the best day of your month. Just fill out Wink's palate profile quiz, answer simple questions that your average store clerk wouldn't ask, or translate into a recommendation. Questions like, how do you take your coffee? How do you feel about blueberries? Then Wink sends you wines curated to your taste. The more wines you rate, the more personalized your monthly selections become. Each month, there are new delicious wines like the insanely popular Summer Water Rosé. No membership fees, skip any month, cancel any time. Shipping is covered, and if you don't like a bottle they send you, they will replace it with a bottle you'll love, no questions asked. Discover great wine today. Go to trywink.com/savage. You'll get $20 off your first shipment. That's trywink.com/savage for $20 off. trywink.com/savage.
Hi, Dan. I'm calling because I am starting a new dom sub relationship with a partner I've been with for a while, and he has experience with this and I do not. And we were going over rules, and I was told that when being punished, I am not allowed to use a safe word, and that if I am going to be a good sub, I have to receive anal, which was one of my hard limits. I am new to this, but feel very uncomfortable, and I'm wondering your thoughts.
Joining me to help tackle this question, Sunny Megatron and Ken Melvoinberg, sexuality educators, hosts of American Sex Podcast, and creators of the Sex with Sunny Megatron TV series on Showtime. Hey, Sunny. Hey, Ken.
Hey, Dan.
So this question.
Yeah, I have some thoughts. Well, first of all, to the caller, you know, she said she doesn't have experience in BDSM, but she definitely has experience in spotting red flags. And caller, your instinct is right. You should feel uncomfortable. You know, consent is the cornerstone of BDSM, and it doesn't matter if it's a scene that you're, you know, doing for an hour or if it's a 24/7 type of relationship, which is, this is what sounds like that is.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, in these types of BDSM relationships, there's a really fine line between BDSM and abuse. It's a slippery slope.
And there are abusers out there who get into the BDSM space because it's a cover. It allows them to abuse someone and get away with it. I'm glad you have some thoughts, and I want you to unpack them, because my only thought was run.
Yes, yes. Yeah, exactly. It is absolutely run, not a like, well, maybe he doesn't know. No. You know, first and foremost, as a submissive, it is always, always your right to clearly be able to state your boundaries and not be pressured to have them crossed because your dominant is telling you, quote, that's what a good submissive does. Mm. That is basically a bunch of crap, you know? And in these 24/7 relationships, it is common, even in some of the healthy relationships, for people to say, well, you know, we play without safe words. However, first of all, that's assuming that you have a relationship with your dominant that is absolutely 100%. You know, you're confident in each other, you communicate well, you have each other's best interests in mind. And even in those cases, when these people say, we play without safe words, you still have to have some kind of caveat where, as a submissive, if you need to reinforce a boundary or revoke consent, you have to be able to do that, whether it's a traditional safe word, whether it's waving jazz hands and calling a timeout or whatever it is, you have to both agree that there's a way to do that and that you'll both respect it when it happens.
The people I know in BDSM relationships who say they play without safe words know each other so well. And, you know, the top is so familiar with the bottom's preferences and limits that it's not that they don't have a safe word. It's that they don't have to articulate the safe word during the scene because the top knows when to push and pull back. And there's just such a bond of trust. And someone who tells you, oh, yeah, you're not allowed to rule out getting fucked in the ass. How can you trust that person enough to go without a safe word during punishment or anything else? Like, this is bullshit. And the caller says that she's been in this relationship for a while, and now they're moving into a DS relationship, dom-sub relationship. And whoever he was before, and maybe you're both inexperienced, and he's been reading a lot of bad neckbeard BDSM writing online by people who actually haven't had BDSM sex or relationships. If you're both novices moving into this, he's doing it wrong. And you guys need to find a mentor and some better writing and instruction around how to have a healthy, successful BDSM relationship. Because if it was a healthy, successful relationship before, and this is the shit he's pulling when you're moving into DS, it's going to end, and it should end. And you should run if he continues to press his case around your ass and around punishing you without a safe word.
Now, there's a kind of an interesting subnote to all of this, and that is occasionally there are people that don't use safe words, but it's because every word is a safe word. So if you say something like no or don't or stop, the top will no or don't or stop. The place that we get the words dominance and submission in reference to BDSM are from Professor William Moulton Marston, the guy that created the lie detector machine and Wonder Woman, the comic book series.
Uh-huh. We've talked about it on the show.
And he actually used this. Yeah, he was a Harvard-trained psychologist that came up with the DISC theory, which is dominance and influence, submission, and compliance. Now, what he was looking at is two factors. Is what you're doing active and passive, active or passive? Active would be dominant, passive would be submissive, and within that is what you're doing agreeable or disagreeable. So if what you're doing is agreeable, that's submission. If what you're doing is disagreeable to you, that is forced compliance, which means you're doing this against your will. Now, there are a couple of easy ways to sort of eliminate this. First and foremost, everyone should realize there's no one true way. The second thing is, and we teach this in all of our classes, everybody should go through a yes, no, maybe list with their partner, mm-hmm. where you go through and you talk about, like, do you like anal? Yes, no, or maybe. And in that case, when somebody says no, the no means no. A maybe leaves open for possibility. But you can go through everything that you might want to do to check compatibility for that. And Sunny and I have actually developed a system to evaluate people even further, and we call it our rough BS system. And what we do is we have people evaluate on a scale of 1 to 10 how much they like these things to figure out if they're compatible with the person that they're playing with.
Mm-hmm.
So the R stands for, on a scale of 1 to 10, how much do you like to be restrained? The O, how much do you like to be owned by another person? U, how much do you like to be used by another person? The G is how much do you like to be given away? H is how much do you like to be humiliated? B, how much you like to be beaten? And S, how much you like to serve others. Now, although these two systems aren't going to be perfect in and amongst themselves, it's a really good way to evaluate people and to see if there's commonalities there without, you know, violating somebody's consent.
It all comes down to communication. That what you just described is just a way to get two people talking to each other. And sometimes people who want to do crazy kinky things, it's all they can do to get the ask out of their mouth. I've always wanted to try this. I'm kind of into this. And then they can't, then they shut down. They can't continue to have the conversation because of kink shaming and slut shaming and just insecurity and fear of being judged. And,
uh-huh.
and the trick is you have to keep having that conversation or you're going to get hurt. And in having that conversation, if someone reveals themselves to be an unsafe top or an unrealistic bottom, and they're out there too, that means you either need to get out and find somebody who's better at it, get yourselves to a munch and learn more about it from people who know what they're doing and know what they're talking about, or just not with that person. Because you could wind
up,
agreed, you know, helpless at the hands of an abuser. One more tip I have from friends, you know, who talk with me about them doing no safe word scenes is often with tops who will give a bottom a choice or several choices of several unpleasant things. Rather than saying, I'm going to do X and you have to take it, the top will in a sexy way say, we're going to do X or we're going to do Y. You pick. And it gives the bottom
right.
some control. And maybe the X option is something the top is familiar enough with the bottom to know that they like and enjoy, and Y maybe something more challenging or that they haven't tried yet or is a little scarier, but maybe they've talked about it and the bottom has been intrigued but a little nervous. And in the moment in the scene, giving the bottom options and choices, which can seem counterintuitive to people who don't know anything about BDSM, can allow a top to explore and a bottom to reach and for boundaries to be tested, right, and maybe pushed a little bit, with the bottom still having some control, even in the absence of a safe word. But getting back to the call, mm-hmm, on the caller, she clearly wants a safe word and doesn't feel comfortable not having one that she can use during quote-unquote punishment. And he has no respect for your hard limits. Getting fucked in the ass is a hard no for you, and he wants to tear that down and tell you you're not a good sub. What he's told you, anybody who says you're not a good sub if you won't X has just told you that they're a terrible dom, an inept, incompetent,
yeah, absolutely,
dom, and likely an abuser flying under the radar of being into BDSM when all they're actually into is wrecking someone.
Absolutely.
So run.
Nailed it. Run.
Are we all in agreement on run?
Yeah. My gut is, it's not like, I don't think he's a top that's like, oh, he made a mistake and just read 50 Shades of Grey and didn't understand BDSM. My gut is, he's a manipulator. Run.
Anybody who tells you that there is one true way in BDSM is going to be completely full of shit, because only you can define those terms for yourself with partners that you have throughout your life. And that is going to change even with the same partner. It's like you mentioned earlier, Dan, that communication is the key to any kind of relationship, even more so when you're doing fun, sexy activities that are a little bit strenuous or outside of the norm. You always have to revisit that, even for, you know, psychological and physical reasons, both.
So tell us quickly about Sex with Sunny Megatron on Showtime for folks who haven't caught it yet.
Yeah. So we have a series on Showtime that we created, produced, and I host called Sex with Sunny Megatron on Showtime. You can get it on demand. And it is a dive into all sorts of alternative sexual practices, but in a, hey, we're all freaks and it's all okay sort of way. A lot of prior shows, you know, when you looked at like HBO's Real Sex, it was kind of a flyover, like, look at these weird people.
Right.
And you know what? We're all the weird people. And weird is pretty normal and okay.
Yeah, that's our friend.
Right.
To be honest, it's sort of a mix between the Mythbusters and HBO's Real Sex. So we look at the science of sexuality. We look at ways to do sort of adventures with your partner or partners and all sorts of alternative sexuality in the science of sexuality.
Yeah. So we had a clown orgy. We had a piss play party. We learned about the G spot. I mean, all sorts of different things. We took a squirt and urine to the lab to decide once and for all, is squirt urine or is it not? We have a lot of
We got to stop there. So squirt urine, which is it?
It is not urine, which is a common misconception. However, I usually tell people when it comes to figuring out anything in sex, is it this or is it that? I need to know definitely. Who the hell cares? Is it hot? Yeah.
Sunny Megatron, Ken Melvoinberg, sexuality educators, hosts of the American Sex Podcast. If you like Savage Love and Savage Lovecast, you will love the American Sex Podcast. Also check out their show on Showtime, Sex with Sunny Megatron. Sunny and Ken, thank you so much. That was a blast. Please come back.
Hey, everybody. Dan and Sunny and Ken, they took another question all about piss play, and they really go in depth on that subject, which you can hear on the Magnum version of the show, which you can find at www.savagelovecast.com. It's twice as long almost as the micro version you're listening to now, and there's no ads, and you support the show. So you might want to think about getting a subscription and trying it out. You could try it out for a month and see if you like it and just listen to these guys talk about piss play. Okay, back to the show.
Hey, Dan. I'm a 29-year-old cisgender female from upstate New York. I've been in a mutually monogamous heterosexual relationship with a 30-year-old guy for 3.5 years. I'm calling because in the last 3.5 years, he has eaten my pussy precisely 0 times. We talked about it recently, and he admitted that he hasn't given oral sex to anyone since he was about 15 years old. He said that the barrier is entirely mental. He's afraid of being bad at giving oral, which then brings up a lot of performance anxieties, which he makes him want to stick with what he knows. But when I asked how a person might get better at giving oral, or at least get over the performance anxiety portion of that, if they never do it, he did not have an answer. Part of the problem, I think, is that I don't have a lot of experience to offer. Not only have I never eaten pussy myself, so no firsthand experience on what that's all about, but I've had only two other sexual partners in my life, both of whom were a bit older and much more experienced than my boyfriend. So how to eat me out is not something I've ever had to teach a guy how to do before. It's also been 4 years since I've gotten oral sex. I'm not sure I could exactly write a handbook on that now anyways. I guess it'd be one thing if he was repulsed by the idea of giving oral sex or something like that. I have straight female friends who don't like giving blowjobs, and while that's probably not ideal for them or their partners, I don't think there's anything inherently wrong with that. But he promises that's not what's going on, and I have to take him at his word. So, any tips?
He has performance anxiety. You might want to tell him that the crappiest oral, the worst oral, is the oral you don't get at all. And some oral is going to be better than no oral. So whatever oral he performs, he can overcome his performance anxiety, overcome his fear of being bad at it right out of the gate. That oral that you're going to get for the very first time is going to be better than the oral you're not getting now. I suspect, however, that he is indeed repulsed by the idea, but he doesn't want to say that because that will make him a shitty, sexy dude who won't eat pussy, particularly if you're going down on him and sucking his dick. And so rather than cop to his discomfort around eating you out, he's telling you he's just afraid he's going to be really bad at it. And that's the only reason he's eating you out. He has no problem with eating you out in concept, no problem with performing cunnilingus as an idea. He's just so convinced or so worried that he's going to be bad at it, they can't bring himself to do it for the very first time. I would remind him, or I would call his bluff and tell him that he probably wasn't very good at PIV intercourse the first time he attempted it either. And yet he did that. So he was obviously motivated enough to try PIV without any experience and overcome his performance anxiety because the desire was there. So the issue here is the desire probably isn't there. He doesn't wanna. But let's give him the benefit of the doubt. Let's say you have this conversation with him and he is finally down to try. You get it through his head that the worst oral is the oral you never get. He doesn't have to do much. You can lay him down and sit on his face and you can grind. You don't want to bloody his lips by grinding them into his teeth, but you can drive the experience. You can take your pleasure from his tongue and from his face while fingering your clit a little bit, moving your clit back and forth between your own fingers and his lips and his tongue, and just take control of it. Maybe he's worried about being in charge of providing you with an orgasm in this way. Maybe you're one of those women who takes a long time to come, or you need a particular kind of stimulation and focused in a particular way, as most women do, as most men do, in order to come. And he's worried that he won't be able to bust those moves with his tongue and his lips and his face. And if you incorporate his tongues and lips and face into a masturbatory grind as you kneel over his face, maybe he'll have less concern. Maybe he'll feel that it's not all on him to provide you with a spectacular experience, if indeed the issue is performance anxiety, and I have my doubts.
Hey, Dan. This is a response to the person that called, expressed that her parents are wealthy and they want her to move to Seattle and buy a house. Your advice was to, you know, do your own life and not let your parents control you, but it sounds to me like her parents maybe give her a lot of money and feel entitled to her decisions. And if that is the case, then I would say you should probably disentangle yourself. I don't know if you're working, but you should probably work hard and make money and not rely on your parents, because as long as they give you money, they will feel entitled to your decisions of what you're doing with it.
Hi, Dan. I'm calling for the guy who was asking about cock rings. And I kept waiting for you to say one of my favorite parts about cock rings is for the ladies. Me and my boyfriend love our cock ring because it has a clit stimulator on it as well. So it's been the first and only way I've been able to come from PIV. because of the clit stimulation while he has the cock ring on, and it's just fabulous. So it's a great plus for the ladies, too, if you guys want to try it. Highly recommend.
Hi, Dan. I'm calling in response to the cock ring call from your latest episode, and I just wanted to add a PSA from your friendly neighborhood ER nurse. If you want to experiment with cock rings, buy a cock ring. Every so often, a guy will come in who has decided to use his wedding ring as a cock ring. Yes, this really happens. Unfortunately, a lot of wedding rings are also made of tungsten or titanium, which are really fucking hard to get off. We have to use a special saw. Furthermore, should you find yourself with something, wedding ring, cock ring, elastic band around your penis that you can't get off, go to the ER. Don't wait a day or longer to see if the situation will resolve itself. It won't. And the longer you wait, the less likely you are to have a functioning penis. Have fun.
And we're going to leave it there. 206-302-2064 is the number here at the Savage Lovecast. If you'd like to record a question or a comment for a future show, give us a buzz. 206-302-2064. Come see me live in Denver on May 10th. Go to savagelovecast.com/events for tickets. Also at savagelovecast.com, you can subscribe to the Magnum edition of the Savage Lovecast. Twice as long, more guests, no ads. Go to savagelovecast.com to become a Magnum member. Also at savagelovecast.com, you can get Savage Lovecast t-shirts, mugs, books, and at itmfa.org, you can get impeachthemotherfuckeralready.com hats, t-shirts, swag, lapel pins, stickers, itmfa.org. Follow me on Twitter at FakeDanSavage. Follow Sunny and Ken on Twitter at AmericanSexPod. The Savage Lovecast is produced every week by Nancy Hartunian and me, and the tech-savvy at-risk youth and Nancy. I'll be back at you next week. Another installment of the Savage Lovecast. Thanks for downloading.